consortium of some of the country's experts have actually come up with. And News 24 actually broke it down really well, and I'm quoting directly from their article now. These are the projections for our country currently in terms of what experts are sort of modelling at the moment. So they say between June and November, 40,000 to 45,000 people could die from COVID-19, with possibly nearly 500 deaths by the end of this month. The total number of cases between June and November is expected to be between 1 and 1.2 million, with around 50,000 cases expected by the end of May. And the projected need for ICU beds is between 20,000 and 35,000 between June and November, and 500 by the end of May. So that's a lot of figures. Let's get an expert to break it down for us, physician and health economist at WITS Health Consortium's Health Economics and Epidemiology Research Office. Dr. Gesine Meyerhardt joins us on the line now. Dr. Meyerhardt, good afternoon. Good afternoon, and thank you very much for making yourself available today. I want to ask you, first of all, I think many people would have been slightly panicked when they saw these large numbers in terms of both infections and possible deaths. But the modelling is based on a number of factors which are ever-changing. Is that correct?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. Thank you very much for having me, and good afternoon to you and all your listeners. At the beginning, I want to make one correction, and that is that the actual reports in the slides that we put out yesterday actually report something else, and that is that we're not looking at a million cases maximum. That is the active cases per day that we are expecting, that are symptomatic, that we are expecting over the next couple of months. So that is the number that essentially corresponds to the 18,000 that you just 17,000 that you just quoted, which are basically the active cases for right now. We believe that when you look at cumulative cases, so the total cases that have been infected at that stage, it's very close to 80% of the population. What we don't know is when this will occur. So it might well be that instead of one big peak that we are projecting now, which will fall sometime between August and September, depending on a number of factors. Instead of that, we might see a couple of smaller peaks. But essentially, we believe that, just like a number of other modeling groups around the world, we will have to have a very high proportion, the majority of South Africans having had contact with the virus before we'll be on the safe side.
Right.
Now, what's important here is that we're also assuming, again, based on both international experience our own kind of starting cohort data that we're starting to collect in South Africa, that about 75% of those cases have absolutely no symptoms. And essentially only 4% altogether of the symptomatic cases will need any kind of hospitalization. However, and that's in the last number I'll bombard everyone with, that still results in about 1% of the total population needing hospitalization at some stage. And quite possibly over a very short period of time. And that is, of course, on top of an already quite overstretched health system in winter, where there's additional requirements for example, flu hospitalization and all the others. So what we're saying is we're not people out of shock. We are mathematic modelers. We, right. We look at these numbers. Emotions do not come into it. Some of us, yes. Of course, then take this a step further. And, a lot of us have been modeling HIV and TB and other horrendous diseases for a long time. So, we do know that all of these mean actual suffering and actual death. So we're not completely immune to it. But the important point here is that this is what we are projecting right now. There's a lot of uncertainty, and there's also a lot that people can still do to avoid a scenario where we have 40,000 deaths in the next couple of months.
Right.
It's up to everyone.
You spoke, Dr. Meyerhardt, about the issue of HIV and TB as well and the modelling around that. I want to ask about its relevance to these figures, to these coronavirus figures. And we've got a large HIV positive population, a large TB positive population here. And they perhaps provide a unique feature in terms of how we as South Africans ought to respond to the coronavirus. How has that population been treated in the modelling?
So right now, we do not have enough data to be doing any interaction between TB or HIV and coronavirus any justice. And when we start modeling, we kind of look at what data do we have, what does it tell us in terms of actual estimation. So that's straightforward. That's just a little bit of mathematics. What does it tell us in terms of how we need to set our assumptions? So that's already a step removed from the actual data. And then the rest is guesswork. And unfortunately, the interaction between HIV and COVID and TB and COVID right now falls under the last rubric. We would be guessing. There's nothing to be gained from that, to be quite frank. There's a lot of uncertainty already in the model, especially as time goes on, but right now we do not know. There's a number of features that are specific to South Africa that we have, in fact, taken into account in the modeling. And one of them is that we have a much younger population overall, on average, than the Northern Hemisphere countries that have been hardest hit. And the comorbidities that we are seeing that drive bad outcomes, so both more severe disease but also higher mortality, are probably somewhat less prevalent here also because they're a function of age. So those factors we can take into account in the model at the moment. For HIV, we are watching the data extremely closely to see if there is a signal, as we call it, that allows us to put it into the model in a meaningful way that goes beyond guesswork. It would help if we actually were collecting data on HIV status in people who are testing positive for COVID, just, of course, as confidentially as we are collecting COVID data at the moment. Right now, that is still in the works. As soon as we have enough data, we will put it into the model.
All right. Dr. Mayrott, I just want to ask you a last question about the issue of beds, because we know that there is very likely, based on this current modelling, going to be a massive shortage of beds in the country. How are we going to deal with the reality of that, should this the worst case scenario play out?
That is the one thing that was important, that is absolutely correct. We will need additional both critical care beds and normal hospital beds, and we will need to increase what we currently have by gigantic factors in any scenario. And even if we had several peaks over a longer period of time, even then we'd still need dramatically additional capacity in the healthcare sector. We are modeling for both sectors, so this is both public and private. We believe at baseline we have about 3,300 combined ICU beds available. We believe that over time we will be looking at between 25 and 35,000 ICU beds that we need. Of course, again, if we manage to spread out the peak a lot more with, you know, everyone sticking to the regulations and doing the hand washing and the social distancing and all of those things, we might be able to flatten the curve enough to only have, you know, peaks of 8,000 or 10,000 beds that we need. But even then, we need to start adding capacity quite dramatically. At the moment, the National Department of Health has been privy to this data for the last 6 to 8 weeks. So this is news only, you know, to the general public, because unfortunately we haven't been able to share until now. But the Department of Health, which perhaps more importantly, has known this data and has taken it very much on board, in order to start planning, acquiring additional capacity. And there's a number of very promising projects underfoot to train additional healthcare workers, you know, in critical care, et cetera, to build local ventilators, which will also be, you know, that's another capacity threshold that will probably go through in the next couple of weeks. To build an additional field hospitals, to shift, you know, to basically acquire additional ICU capacity within existing hospitals, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of development already underfoot that has been informed by our models as well as other models.
Thank you so much for your expert input into that for us, Dr. Gesina Mayrott. She's a physician and health economist at the Wits Health Consortium's Economics and Epidemiology Research Unit.